The following program is intended for mature audiences.
Welcome to Savino Veritas, the Savino Veritas News. GOP repackaging of New Jersey Governor Chris Christie for a comeback into the 2016 presidential campaign hit a snag today as marketing experts realized they had run out of wrapping material during his first packaging, prematurely naming the revived campaign the Tell It Like It Is Tour. A novice staffer was fired for admitting the governor hasn't had a chance. He said, Governor Christie has a better chance of notoriety if he were a contestant on The Biggest Loser. Foreign diplomats concur that on the off chance Chris Christie were to become president and an Iran nuclear deal had been signed, the deal would have to be trashed and reworked from the start. They said that it wouldn't be because of President Christie couldn't support the deal, but that the deal's framework couldn't support Christie. NFL's woman referee, Sarah Thomas, silenced critics today by saying, I'm no overnight sensation. Many insecure male players corrected her, however. They claim that the so-called overnight sensation they were referring to was the sensation experienced overnight by male league officials who may have slept with her during her 20 years of officiating. At a news conference, in answer to that, Thomas threw her hanky on the floor and said, that would be illegal contact, 5 yards and an automatic first down. President Obama read to a group of school children on the White House lawn this afternoon. News reporters were confused. Before the reading, they asked the president what he'd be reading. When he answered, Where the Wild Things Are, they assumed he was referring to Maurice Sendak's classic children's book. The president had misunderstood the question, thinking he was being asked where he'd be reading. There in Washington, D.C., Where the Wild Things Are. Later, a bee frightened the children. The president tried to ease their fears, saying, Bees are good. Michelle quelled their fears when she reminded the children that they were students, and so the insect must be just a harmless spelling bee. Another police shooting of a black man by a white cop. This time, though, the results are much different. A North Charleston, South Carolina police officer has not only been fired for shooting, but arrested and charged with murder. Many right-wingers are upset with what they are calling a rush to judgment, based on just one video clearly showing the alleged murderer, Officer Michael Slager, pumping 8 bullets in the back of an unarmed, allegedly black man, Walter Scott. Defenders of the officer Slager point out that the so-called victim, Scott, hasn't even protested. Citizens of North Charleston point out that that's because Scott, who hasn't said a word, moved, or taken a breath, is allegedly dead. When asked about the incident, NRA CEO Wayne LaPierre said, You see, if Scott had a firearm or of some sort, there'd be no murder charge right now. It's Obama's fault.
Are you ready? Studios here in Burbank, California. We are not soundproof. We are not foolproof, but we are 90 proof. And Lion's Den Studios here in Burbank, California, land of make-believe and fantasy. But you heard the news. There's yet another police shooting, another white police officer shooting another black man in the back 8 times on video. And the evidence, I guess, was just too overwhelming not to, at the very least, fire this officer, but actually charge him with murder. This is new. Usually when this happens, people just don't respond in any way in terms of their having any consequences for this, that is, the white community. Now, it's interesting that we are talking about this because it is 150 years ago today, 150 years ago today, is the signing of the peace treaty of the Civil War. The Civil War ended 150 years ago today. And as I said in tweets today and in other areas, just standing around in the street, I'm a very outstanding spokesman. I was outstanding in the street saying these things. And, you know, it's just, it doesn't feel like it's over. It doesn't feel like it's rekindled. And it is no longer perhaps north and south, but it is definitely red against the blue. And we're going to be getting into some of that. We're going to get into the roots of the Tea Party, which I think is the cause of much of this confrontation, continued confrontation of the Civil War as we explore this. We'll be hearing a little bit of the Ken Burns, just a little bit of Ken Burns' documentary on the Civil War. And just coincidentally, we will be hearing some audio humor from Stan Freberg, who was 88 years old, who died the other day. And I had already planned to use his cut about the Civil War. And then it was, in fact, the day that I chose to use it, he passed on. Very funny man, hysterical man, a madman, a madman here. I think he is here. And here in Southern California, and we are coming to you from Southern California, from Burbank, land of make-believe and fantasy, by way of Canada. We will be getting the local news in Canada at about midnight on the East Coast. That'll be 9 o'clock Pacific time, midnight on the East Coast. And wherever you are in the world, we would certainly like to hear from you. So, let's get to, let's listen now here, talk about confrontation and the Civil War. We're going to play you two songs of the Civil War. We'll start with the Confederate version and then the Union version. And, of course, both are everybody knows these songs. Everybody in the United States, I think even in Canada, everybody has heard of these songs. A battle cry of freedom. First the Confederate version, and then the Union version. We'll start with the Confederate version, since they cry more than the Union people because they lost. Let's hear it.
Shout out the battle cry of freedom. Beat it off, we've conquered and we'll conquer oft again. Shout out the battle cry of freedom. Our deep sea forever, she's never at a loss. Down with the eagle and up with the cross.
Freedom by the Confederates. And you notice the refrain, one of the refrains of that song was, down with the eagle and up with the cross. And I wish they had refrained from saying that. I wish they would stop, I wish they would refrain now from saying that, because that is still what they keep saying. Down with the eagle, up with the cross, down with the government, up with, I don't know. We're actually, as a topic we are going to get into tonight, this being just a few days past Easter, and going into just how Christian are these right-wingers and Republicans, looking at the teachings of Christ. We're going to see that they're not so Christian at all. Anyway, way back 150 years ago, before the end of the Civil War, the Confederates were espousing death to the eagle, down with the eagle, up with the cross. Of course, their cross being the cross that was on the Confederate flag, which is symbolic, of course, of Christ's cross and Christianity. And a lot of our problems here in the United States stem from this fabricated, hypocritical point of view of Christianity. It's the still going on today, 150 years later, 150 years after the supposed end of the Civil War. And maybe the Civil War did end, but we have now recently started, at least, you know, I would say that the birth of this was, you know, the beginning of the Obama administration, so certainly when the Tea Party started to combat this horrible idea of a black man being the president. Oh my God, a black man. Black man being the president. And I believe that this is the not-so-civil war that started then, funded by the Koch brothers and their ridiculous amount of money. And I don't begrudge anybody for having as much money as one can have or make or want. They get that money without harming people, without hurting people, without oppressing people. And that's certainly not the case with the Koch brothers. Certainly not the case with the Koch brothers. And anybody who is a Tea Party person, if you think that you are free and can do whatever you want, you don't even see the reality of being led around by the nose by the Koch brothers, who have funded everything that you stand for and has paid off every leader, so-called leader, who has unfortunately elected office. So the Civil War continues today. The not-so-civil war, I say. You're listening to Tom Savino, and this is Savino Veritas, and coming to you from Burbank, California, in Wine the Truth, W-H-I-N-E, the fine wine of select gripes. And I'm griping tonight about the continuation of this confrontation between the North and the South, now the red and the blue, but the same ideologies. The same ideologies have continued. I will say this, and I do want to say as often as I can, as soon as whenever I see changes, I really like to announce those changes. And as horrible as it is to announce once again that a black man was shot in the back by a white police officer, that doesn't seem like much of a change. But the fact that he was immediately fired and immediately arrested and charged with murder, that is a change. And I might add, this is in South Carolina. So there's hope. Oh, dare I say the word hope. We associate that with a certain leader of ours. For those who are on the right wing, didn't mean to offend you by using the word hope. And maybe things can change. I do see some things, and I will report these things when I see them. That is one of them. We'll see where this goes. This wasn't just glossed over, and the police, you know, some committee of police officers investigating, finding no wrongdoing, as has happened over the last couple of years. It's even in the North, speaking about the Northeast, I mean, in New York City, this has happened. Staten Island, on film, illegal chokehold by a police officer who killed a man, black man, for selling cigarettes. As much as I am against cigarettes, I don't think death by strangulation is a good consequence or fair consequence, but that is what happened. And that was just, you know, oh, he did the right thing, just totally glossed over. As far as I know, that police officer is still a police officer in New York. Well, we heard the battle cry of freedom, Confederate version. Let us now hear the battle cry of freedom, the Union version. Can hear The battle cry of freedom from the Union perspective. The winners, there's never a winner in war. There is never a winner in war. Mark those words. But the North, I can't think of the word because I'm losing my brain cells that have to do with words and nomias, dysnomia, I guess. Okay. Prevailed. There you go. The Union prevailed, and there's a couple of, there's really interesting things about the Civil War. First of all, over 600 people died. 600 soldiers, and I'm sure women and children have died, but over 600, I see 600, that just happened down the block here, 600,000 people died in this horrible war. And, I do think, this was our Civil War, and I hope we never have violence like that again in the United States. That was bad enough we have any kind of violence, but that mass violence and death. I can't help but think, when I think of mass violence and death and 600,000 people dying, and I do think of the words of Bill Maher, and I agree with him on this. I don't think even Bill Maher is some great thinker and some great philosopher, but I do think he has it right here when he talks about the Middle East and how the Middle East has got to have its civil war. They have to have its civil war and get over it, and we should not be part of it. The United States, Britain, any other nation other than our Arabic nations that are in the Middle East, we should have nothing to do with it. And that's not just to get out of responsibility. And that's not even saying, what are we just going to let ISIS do, whatever, this horrible thing. ISIS, should they, we're not going to respond to them. As understandable as it is to respond to them, as much as I want to personally respond to them, I wish I could in some way personally respond to them, I think that we need to do the Christian thing, what Christ would do, and it's not a response. Let them deal with their problems. Let them deal with their problems. Yes, they are killing and beheading and maiming and doing horrible, horrible things to people who are not Islamic. Just because they're not Islamic. And that is something that should be addressed, I think. But the Middle East has to come to terms with their problems themselves. They need to do that themselves. They need to have their own civil war or deal with it some other way. I don't espouse war. Diplomacy, if they can, or however they want to or can. I know, believe me, I'm simplifying this by just saying however they can, I don't know how. I don't know how they can do that, but they have to have their civil war. I mentioned Christianity, and I'm going to get into that right now, as this was Easter that just passed. And let's talk about Christianity and Republicans. These are some things that I came across this week about just how Christian are these so-called Christian Tea Party folk and Republicans. Well, let's read what they say, these people who are expert at this. One thing I read this week which says you cannot be a Republican. You cannot be a Republican and a Christian. I'm going to read this. No one in American life today proclaims their allegiance to Christ more conspicuously than those who have rejected most of what Christ actually taught. And that those people would be Republicans. The modern Republican Party's hell-bent embodiment of nearly everything Christ warned against has become so serious that we have to call it out. You cannot be a Republican and a Christian. Of course, it wasn't always this way. There was a time, maybe even as recently as the early 1990s, when to support the Republican Party was not altogether evil. And further back, of course, things were even more different. Garrison Keillor once reminisced, and he comes from an upper, and my commentary, Garrison Keillor, coming from the Minnesota area, is coming from a very Republican area. Garrison Keillor once reminisced, Republicans used to be, quote, moderate business-minded civic boosters and unapologetic patriots who were the linchpins and bulwarks of small towns across the Midwest, the enthusiastic backers of projects for the civic good, usually in partnership with town liberals, the librarian, the bar owner, a lawyer or two, the Methodist minister, the banker's wife. These Republicans were uniters and diehard optimists and persons of compassionate conscience, inveterate doers of good deeds, says Garrison Keillor. I'll go on reading what this person has to say. The person, by the way, is not, it goes by the tag, Square Force One Follow. Even today, there are probably some Republicans who still fit that description. The problem is that they are, for all practical purposes, invisible in American public life. And if their party found out about them, they would be hounded out of it. I have evidence of this. There's evidence of this. Very conservative Republicans. I think the guy's name is, strangely enough, ISIL. I think his name is ISIL. Who is a very conservative Republican, but went to the Antarctica and discovered with scientists that there is such a thing as global warming and saw the evidence firsthand with his eyes and his cold hands. From my cold, dead hands. Anyway, people like him were drummed out of office quickly, for admitting to scientific fact. Anyway, let's go back to this. If they dared to compete in the lunatic talent show of Republican primary politics, they wouldn't stand a chance. The reason that you cannot be a Republican and a Christian is that today's Republican Party doesn't appear to stand for anything but what Christ strenuously rejected, like organized violence, self-righteous division, and greed. To say the least, this is hard to square with Christ's teachings and example. I am not a Christian, says this person writing. And I'm certainly no biblical scholar, but you don't have to be. It's not hard to tell the difference between who is and isn't really Christian and the Republicans. You're not. He's saying this directly to Republicans. You are not. here's some reasons why he's going to quote the Bible. He's quoting the Bible, the New Testament, Matthew, verse 5:39. It says, in Christ, we're talking about someone who said, turn the other cheek. And that's all those who take the sword will perish with the sword. And we could name over 50 senatorial Republicans and more than that congressional Republicans who sing that old Beach Boy song now. Bomb, 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 bomberan. Bomb, 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 bomberan. That's just one example. Here's another quotation from Matthew 7:1. In Matthew 7:1, we're talking about someone who warned, and this is Jesus, who said, judge not, that ye be not judged, and urge people not to look for a mote in someone else's eye while they have a beam stuck in their own. He also said, Mark 10:25, where Christ is talking, where they're saying in Mark 10:25, they're talking about someone who said, woe unto you that are rich. Hey, Koch brothers, you hear this? Koch brothers, either one of you, all of you, there are more than the two assholes that we know about the Koch brothers. There are others. But the other, at least one other, doesn't inflict his values on others. He spends his billions on fine wine and doesn't buy politicians. So Christ said, woe unto you that are rich. That was from Luke 6:24. And, quote, it is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. And back then, they were not talking about cigarettes. They were talking about big-ass camels. That was Mark 10:25. Did Jesus ever have anything good to say about people who hoard wealth? No. I know that many of Christ's teachings are open to interpretation, but so many of the people who make a point of asking, quote, what would Jesus do, end quote, seem to have no interest at all in the most likely answers. It's ironic that they have something that they have sometimes been referred to as, quote, values voters, end quote. Since their values are so devoid of value, at least from the Christian point of view, their main interest in Christianity seems to be an expectation of being rewarded in the afterlife despite bad behavior while alive. And as for their leaders, so-called leaders, beware wolves in sheep's clothing. That's Matthew 7:15. Most atheists and agnostics are truer Christians than this crew, the Republicans, the Tea Party people especially. The impossibility of squaring what Christ actually taught with the words and deeds of today's Republicans, so-called Christians, is what makes this all fair game. These people are hypocrites. These people conveniently ignore most of what Christ actually said. Christ would scold and hold these people accountable for their reckless and downright evil behavior. And many of them, given a chance, would re-crucify Christ if he came back today and taught the still radical ideals he apparently advocated. You cannot have it both ways. You have to choose, because today you cannot be both a Republican and a Christian. And I would like to emphasize the word today, because, and that goes back to my whole thing about the continuation of the not-so-civil war that's going on today. Today. You know, there was a time when you had Republicans like Eisenhower even Ronald Reagan. I mean, I can make a list, and I will. So sometime during this show, not this episode, but in some shows, I will make a list of the harmful things, the things I believe that were harmful that Ronald Reagan did. Killing the Fairness Doctrine and broadcasting, which now today allows, that has grown into today's dysfunctional news media that has no consequences. You know, the media has no consequences. They can say whatever they want. Thus, the so-called, you know, Fox so-called news, where they can say just whatever. They're not news at all. Not news at all, just espousing what they want. So the person who did write this did end the last sentence by saying, today you cannot be both a Republican and a Christian. And I would have to say, based on the evidence, that's totally accurate. Today, you cannot be both a Republican and a Christian. You gotta choose one or the other, because what the values of the Republicans are today is anti-Christian. This is Tom Savino. You're listening to Savino Veritas, live from Burbank, California, in Wine Truth, W-H-I-N-E. Fine wine of select grapes. I may be joking, but I'm never kidding, and we will now hear from the forefathers of America on the same subject of Christianity and reason. We are, as soon as I hit the correct button. The forefathers, our forefathers, what if I had five fathers, but our founding fathers, they were all Christian. They were all Christian. Some of them were Masons, a very interesting group of people. My uncle was a Mason, and had some episode during Savino Veritas. In the future, we will delve into the Masons. But anyway, I'm going to read some of the things that the Founding Fathers said about reason and Christianity and separation of church and state and so forth. Nobody can deny the fact that Christianity has played a huge role in our history, from the first Thanksgiving to the ideas of Jesus Christ that are embroidered in our culture today. Christianity and the Bible are responsible for a big part of our heritage. However, many conservatives, that would be the Republicans and Tea Party, especially Tea Party people, will take this fact way out of context. They'll think that you have to be a Christian to be patriotic. Well, that's an interesting comment, especially since we've already explored and have shown that you can't be a Christian and be a Republican. You certainly can be a Christian and be patriotic, but you cannot be a Christian and a Republican today, or certainly a Tea Party person today. So, you know, the teachings of Jesus Christ are being charitable, loving one another, treating strangers with kindness. This is not the values of the Republican Party. I don't want to waste my time listing all these obscure far-right arguments, so instead, I'll list the facts straight from our forefathers. Okay, here's a quotation now from George Washington. George Washington said, quote, "If I could conceive that the general government might ever be so administered as to render the liberty of conscience insecure, I beg you will be persuaded that no one would be more zealous than myself to establish effectual barriers against the horrors of spiritual tyranny and every species of religious persecution. And he said that in a letter to the United Baptist Chamber in Virginia in 1789. This was next thing was said by Thomas Jefferson in a letter to Peter Carr in 1787. He said, quote, "Question with boldness even the existence of God, because if there be one, he must more approve of the homage of reason than that of blindfolded fear." And Samuel Adams, before he had a beer, said in The Rights of the Colonists in 1771, an essay, The Rights of the Colonists, 1771, said, "In regard to religion, mutual toleration in the different professions thereof is what all good and candid minds in all ages have ever practiced, and both by precept and example inculcated on mankind." Thomas Paine said in The Rights of Man in 1791, quote, "Persecution is not an original feature in any religion, but it is always the strongly marked feature of all religions established by law. Take away the law establishment, and every religion reassumes its original benignity." Roger Sherman said to Congress in 1789, quote, "Congress has no power to make any religious establishments." Benjamin Franklin, in the Poor Richard's Almanac of 1758, said, quote, The way to see by faith is to shut the eye of reason." Interesting. Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to Danbury Baptists in 1802, said, quote, "I contemplate with a sovereign reverence that act of the whole American people build a wall of separation between church and state." Thomas Paine again, this time in the American Crisis number 5 in 1776, said, "To argue with a man who has renounced the use of reason is like administering medicine to the dead. To argue with a man who has renounced the use of reason is like administering medicine to the dead." Boy, does that hit the mark of so many people in Congress and in the Senate who blatantly disregard scientific evidence, let's say in regard to, for example, in regard to climate change and how that is killing us all. How does it come to pass? In regard to scientific evidence against GMOs and how they espouse lies supporting GMOs, genetically modified organisms, in our food-like substances, how these people deny reason and how they just adhere to the dollar, the almighty dollar, faith in the almighty dollar. And is there anything else I see you can read? Yeah, of course you can read Thomas' pamphlet. And then final, here's another one from Thomas Jefferson. He was very prolific, Thomas Jefferson, writing-wise and apparently biologically wise as well. "A bill for establishing religious freedom." This is an essay he wrote in 1779. "Our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions any more than our opinions in physics or geometry." That's a great, I'm going to read it again. Our civil rights have no dependence on our religious opinions any more than our opinions in physics or geometry. This is something that certainly Tea Party and Republican people won't believe, won't say they believe in. They won't say they believe in, because that would go against the almighty dollar of the corporado. James Madison, who sent a letter to William Bradford in 1774, said, quote, "Christian establishments tend to great ignorance and corruption, all of which facilitate the execution of mischievous projects." I'd have to say that's true. And by the way, in saying that's true, I am not in any way saying I totally don't believe that Christ and what he taught was ignorant and corrupt. Just the opposite. But what Christianity has done for what Christ has taught is another subject altogether. George Washington again said in an address to Congress in 1790, quote, "There is nothing which can better deserve our patronage than the promotion of science and literature. Knowledge is in every country the surest basis of public happiness." Wow. Knowledge is in every country the surest basis of public happiness. How un-American is that today, according to the Tea Party people, according to the Koch brothers, according to all of those who espouse the destruction of knowledge, because knowledge means you won't buy my toxic coal, you won't buy my GMO products, you won't buy natural gas because of that was gotten by fracking. And finally, we have one more by James Madison to the General Assembly of the Commonwealth of Virginia in 1785, said, quote, "During almost 15 centuries has the legal establishment of Christianity been on trial? What has been its fruits? More or less, in all places, pride and indolence in the clergy, ignorance and servility in the laity, in both superstition, bigotry, and persecution." And that, my friends, is what we are seeing today in the name of Jesus Christ, who is not ignorant or corrupt. His teachings were not ignorant and corrupt. We're seeing the bastardization of those teachings, the twisting and spinning of those teachings. And actually, in modern day, we're seeing nothing to do with those teachings, but saying things have to do with those teachings, saying things in the name of Christ. All of these things that are truly the opposite of what Christ wanted, that is being done today in the name of Jesus Christ. And I think that's a shame and prolongs the not-so-civil war that goes on today. Listening to Tom Savino. And here
we have shared the incommunicable experience of war. We have felt, we still feel, the passion of life to its top.
This is Ken Burns' Civil War, a little bit of it.
Fire. Oliver Wendell Holmes. By the summer of 1861, Wilmer McLean had had enough. Two great armies were converging on his farm in what would be the first major battle of the Civil War. Bull Run, or Manassas as the Confederates called it, would soon rage across the aging Virginian's farm, a Union shell going so far as to explode in the summer kitchen. Now, McLean moved his family away from Manassas, far south and west of Richmond, out of harm's way, he prayed, to a dusty little crossroads called Appomattox Courthouse. And it was there, in his living room, 3.5 years later, that Lee surrendered to Grant. And Wilmer McLean could rightfully say that the war began in my front yard and ended in my front parlor. The Civil War was fought in 10,000 places, from Valverde, New Mexico, and Tullahoma, Tennessee, to St. Albans, Vermont, and Fernandina on the Florida coast. More than 3 million Americans fought in it, and over 600,000 men, 2% of the population, died in it. American homes became headquarters. American churches and schoolhouses sheltered the dying. And huge foraging armies swept across American farms and burned American towns. Americans slaughtered one another wholesale here in America, in their own cornfields and peach orchards, along familiar roads and by waters with old American names. In 2 days at Shiloh, on the banks of the Tennessee, more American men fell than in all previous American wars combined. At Cold Harbor, 7,000 Americans fell in 20 minutes. Men who had never strayed 20 miles from their own front doors now found themselves soldiers in great armies, fighting epic battles hundreds of miles from home. They knew they were making history, and it was the greatest adventure of their lives. War made some rich, ruined others, and changed forever the lives of all who lived through it. A lackluster clerk from Galena, Illinois, a failure in everything except marriage and war, who in 3 years would be head of the Union Army, and in 7, President of the United States. An eccentric student of theology and military tactics, a hypochondriac, who rode into battle with one hand raised to keep, he said, the blood balanced. A college professor from Maine who, on a little hill in Pennsylvania, ordered an unlikely textbook maneuver that saved the Union Army and possibly the Union itself. Two ordinary soldiers, one from Providence, Rhode Island, the other from Columbia, Tennessee, who each served 4 years and together seemed to have been everywhere during the war and lived to tell the tale. The courtly, unknowable aristocrat who disapproved of secession and slavery, yet went on to defend them both at the head of one of the greatest armies of all time. The runaway boy who stole himself from slavery, recruited 2 regiments of black soldiers, and helped transform the Civil War into a struggle for the freedom of all Americans. And then there was the rough man from Illinois, who would rise to be the greatest president the country has ever seen. Between 1861 and 1865, Americans made war on each other and killed each other in great numbers, if only to become the kind of country that could no longer conceive how that was possible. What began as a bitter dispute over Union and states' rights ended as a struggle over the meaning of freedom in America. At Gettysburg in 1863, Abraham Lincoln said perhaps more than he knew. The war was about a new birth of freedom.
Any understanding of this nation has to be based, and I mean really based, on an understanding of the Civil War. I believe that firmly. It defined us. The Revolution did what it did. Our involvement in European wars, beginning with the First World War, did what it did. But the Civil War defined us as what we are, and it opened us to being what we became, good and bad things. And it is very necessary, if you're going to understand the American character in the 20th century, to learn about this enormous catastrophe of the mid-19th century. It was the crossroads of our being, and it was a hell of a crossroads.
For me, the picture of the Civil War as a historic phenomenon is not on the battlefield. It's not about weapons. It's not about soldiers, except to the extent that weapons and soldiers at that crucial moment joined the discussion about something higher, about humanity, about human dignity, about human freedom.
You're listening to Cervino Veritas on SRN1 from Canada. And, the baseball season has started, and the Toronto Blue Jays have won two out of the first three games from the New York Yankees, my team. Ironically, the Yankees, which is a name, of course, that came, I guess it was associated with England, but certainly during the Civil War was the name of the northern people, the Yankees. And like the northern people, my New York Yankees baseball team is the world's greatest sports franchise. Statistically, that is, at least. That is, they've won more championships than any other franchise. But they did not beat the Toronto Blue Jays, who won two of three at Yankee Stadium. And in a minute, we're going to be going to the local news at SRN Studios in Ontario and with Phil Holm in just a bit. If I could find the button to push so that Phil can speak to us. Hello, Phil. Are you with us? Where are you, Phil? I don't know, Phil. We're just a minute. It's going to be midnight on the East Coast in time for the local news with Phil Holm at SRN Studios in Canada. Joining him now.
Good evening, Tom. A Mississauga man is accused of trafficking a female youth. Halton police claim Abdi Fattah Salah had exploited his victim for many weeks in Oakville, Mississauga. More delays in the sentencing of a Brampton man convicted of attempted murder. A judge's order demanding clarification in his mental state had not been acted upon. And a panhandler faces weapons charges in Bramley. Police say a gun was pointed at a man after he refused to give change in front of a convenience store. Mostly sun in the forecast, 10 at Pearson, north 10. This update is brought to you by Frank Catolo on 148.ca. Anxiety and its complexities. Frank wades in at 148.ca/Frank. I'm Philip Hong from SRN National News, and now back to Savino Veritas with Tom Savino on SRN1.
Thank you, Phil. Thank you for that. I appreciate that. Let's get back to the Civil War. I mean, it ended 150 years ago, and as I said, Stan Freberg, who is somebody I've admired over the decades, is a satirical, comedic person who also was a madman. I mean, in the advertising business, he started started wacky things that, you know, Gino's pizza rolls and things like that. Those were all his marketing ideas, and they took off with his kind of sense of humor. Didn't take things very seriously, and it helped him a great deal. But here's some work from Stan Freberg. Let's take a listen.
As the war between the states draws closer, the new president works overtime, poring over papers into the night.
I see where Mark Twain is packing them in Philly.
Will you put that variety down and get your feet off the furniture?
Whoops, sorry.
Where were you raised, in a log cabin?
As a matter of fact...
Now, I got the deal all set to use your name on a little set of toy logs.
Yes?
A highway and a music center.
Wait a minute. How's that going to sound? The Abe Center?
It's going to sound just fine.
All right, dear.
And one more thing.
Yes?
What about the Dred Scott decision?
The what?
Dred Scott? Nice-looking gentleman we interviewed yesterday for the White House butler's job.
Oh, yeah.
The agency says if he isn't right for the butler's job, how about Secretary of Agriculture?
Well, Harriet Beecher Stowe.
Hello, Mary. I hope I'm not intruding. Why, nonsense, Harriet. I was just leaving.
One last thing, Abe.
Yes?
About the beard.
Yes?
You gonna keep it?
Yes, I am.
Why?
It's a guy thing.
Oh. Well, is it okay if Treasury puts your picture on the penny and the $5 bill?
Fine.
2% of the gross?
Whatever.
Done.
Well, Harriet, I certainly enjoyed reading the manuscript of your novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin, but do you mind a little constructive criticism?
Oh, no.
Well, one of the first rules of a successful novel is you gotta get a little conflict into it. Now, you've written a nice romantic story, but to take this fella Simon...
Legree.
Simon Legree, yes. I think he's too mamby-pamby. Can't you make him meaner?
Who would it be mean to?
Well, he could irritate the old gentleman, Uncle...
Tom.
Uncle Tom, right. Legree could drive him out in the snow, rough up his wife and kid, get some shock value going for you. That's what people look for in a novel.
Really?
Trust me, violence and more violence. You'd be surprised what kind of PR this could get for your book.
Stowe's violent little book as millions of people rush to buy Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Ah, Mr. Stanton?
Mr. President, I'm afraid I bring bad news, sir.
Yes?
Fort Sumter has been fired upon. This means war.
Really?
Thanks to that controversial novel, Uncle Tom's Cabin.
Yeah, violent book. Terrible. Yes, would you care for some tea?
No, thank you. I think we can safely say the Civil War has definitely started.
The heck you say?
Yes.
All right, you alert the White House press room. I'll notify American Heritage.
One more thing, sir.
Yes?
General Robert E. Lee has tendered his resignation from the United States Army and defected to the South.
Robert E. Lee? That's the last steamboat I name after him.
Mr. Lincoln?
Yes? Oh, you must be the new butler, Dred Scott.
Yes, sir.
Nice to have you with us.
Where shall I serve the tea, Mr. Lincoln?
How about the Lincoln bedroom?
The Lincoln,
Never mind. Put the tray right down here in the sitting room. That'll be fine.
Trouble, 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 Mr. Lincoln.
I'm afraid so.
Well, sir, you know what I always say?
What do you always say?
Always say, 87 years ago...
How many years is that?
87.
Oh.
Our fathers brought forth a pint...
Hold it. Wait just a minute. I better make a note on this old envelope here. 87. Go ahead.
Years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation.
Hold it. You're going too fast.
Conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition...
To the proposition...
That all persons are created equal.
Persons? Why not men are created equal?
Got to be politically correct.
Politically,
Furthermore, this nation cannot exist half slave and half free.
Hold it. Half free and half slave?
Other way around. Half slave and half free.
Better.
Now, we are engaged in a great civil war.
All right, you don't have to rub it in.
Testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived, so dedicated, can long hang in there.
Can long,
get all that?
Keep your voice down. The walls could have ears, you know.
Don't worry about it. The world will little note nor long remember what we say here.
Yes, go on.
But it will never forget the cigar butts a man's got to clean up in a place like this.
All right, yeah, that'll do.
Tell you something, Mr. Lincoln.
Wait till I get my pen and envelope. All right, go ahead.
My mom always said to me three things.
Yes?
She said, number one, never stay in wet clothes. Number two, lay off the hard liquor and eat plenty greens.
All right, fine, that'll be all.
And number three, that government of the people, by the people, and for the people shall not perish from Alabama.
Alabama?
Or wherever.
Since last Tuesday. I was inaugurated last Tuesday.
Well, you were?
Yes, I was.
Very well. Have it your way. You are President of the United States.
It was in all the papers.
Yes. Well, Mr. Lincoln, what basically is your problem?
That is my problem. I never wanted to be president. Don't you see? It was all Mary's idea.
Mary?
My wife. Nag, nag, nag. Was a filibuster from morning to night. You want to be a two-bit lawyer all your life. Don't you want to live in the White House?
The presidency then represents a certain wish fulfillment for Mrs. Lincoln?
Believe me, they should have made her president.
Really?
No, not really. I'm just joshing. She didn't have the beard for it, actually. Or the mole.
Yes. But if you are unhappy being president, what then would you rather be?
You'll laugh.
No, I won't.
All I have ever wanted to be was in show business.
Sir?
A stand-up comedian. I started wisecracking around when I was about 19.
You worked on the stage?
Mostly I worked around Cracker Barrels, you know. From the time I heard them laughing, oh, I was hooked.
Did you only work Cracker Barrels?
No, I worked around. I did casuals, a barbershop here, a rail-splitting contest there. Once in a blue moon, a Kiwanis luncheon. I was a riot. Here, ask me how long a man's legs ought to be.
All right. How long should a man's legs be?
Long enough to reach the ground. That's the kind of jokes I did.
You never told anyone that you aspired to be a professional comic?
Well, I never came right out and said anything, but why do you think I was joshing around all this time, doing stand-up in this wrinkled suit? I kept hoping to be discovered.
Baggy pants syndrome.
Anyhow, I didn't notice anybody signing me up for Christie's Minstrels exactly, so I started studying law at night, you know, an ace in the hole. Next thing I knew, I'd open up a little practice over in Springfield, Illinois, got married, and settled down.
You kept telling jokes as an attorney?
Well, just to keep my hand in. Yes, I wanted to be ready in case my big break came. Too bad you never caught me in court. I came off like a kind of funny Clarence Darrow.
Clarence,
I do a deadpan cross-examination I'd like to have you see sometime. I'm also very funny in a sidebar.
Getting back to your problem, Mr. Lincoln.
My problem is Mary, mostly. Marriage is like a warm bath. Once you get used to it, it ain't so hot.
Yes. How far do you think you would have gone as a humorist?
I'll tell you how far. After my debates, I was just on the verge of being booked into Lowe's Peoria. I mean, it was in the bag. After that, I would have been a cinch for the Orpheum Circuit, vaudeville. But oh, no. Mrs. Lincoln made me go into politics, campaign for the presidency. Next thing you know, I was President of the United States. Now, I suppose I'll never make the big time.
Would you like to talk about it?
Would I?
Are you tired of people dying around you at your favorite Italian restaurant? Well, worry no more. Found the ultimate silencer and non-bloody assassinations. Hey, you never have to worry about loud sounds, gunfire, people falling over you, bloody people on top of you. Because of the boys that forget about it, have discovered a new way, a silent way of killing. For their assassination victims, they serve them Ebola spaghetti or Ebola spaghetti and meatballs. And the victims, they die silently in the back of the room. You got somebody you want out of your head? Hey, forget about it. Get him a gift certificate and forget about it. But make sure you are specified. They try Ebola spaghetti or Ebola spaghetti and meatball or Ebola macaroni. Ebola spaghetti.
We've been waiting to get our hands on. Introducing the new City Bill, the bill by bankers for bankers. Sure, it's a regular last-minute budget bill that just barely keeps the government from shutting down, but it's also your ticket to financial freedom. Here at Citigroup, we know financial reform is about as appealing as testifying before Congress on subprime mortgages. That's why City Bill dismantles reform bit by socialist bit. Once again, you'll be able to revel in the most complex derivative schemes your creative mind can dream up, all with the security of knowing American taxpayers have got your back in the highly unlikely event you fail. After all, 2008 was over 100 years ago. There's a reason banks like us just spent more than $1.2 billion to lobby and develop Citibill. We control over 90% of the $700 trillion derivatives market. So let your imagination run wild. Credit default swaps, fraud-backed securities, unicorn dander derivatives, the choice is yours. Wherever your feverish financial mind takes you, with the new Citibill, you've got democracy by bankers for bankers. Past performance is a pretty good guarantee of future results.
Can. Mo, give it a chance.
Divino Veritas, in Wine the Truth, W-H-I-N-E, Wine the Truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth. So help me. Help me by writing to me, tweeting me. I'll give you the tweeting address later. Tweet me at TJ Savino, at TJ Savino, at Twitter. Write to me at djsavino22@gmail.com. Instagram, by the way, is the same as my Twitter, TJ Savino. You can reach me that way. You can reach me through the ether of the universe. I will pick up on it. I definitely will. Now, one of the things that the people who like to espouse, like to feed the confrontation between red and blue and north and south, not so much north and south these days, but red and blue. One of the things they do to spin their message is to create fear. And I saw a great movie that I totally recommend called The Merchants of Doubt. It's a documentary that shows how the corporations of today are using the same techniques that the totally discredited and disproven tobacco industry has used. But they're using the same techniques to create doubt about climate change, create fear that we might need energy to do this, that, and the other. And the biggest thing, the biggest fear they create is by putting jobs in doubt. No matter what the situation, they will say that we're going to lose jobs if we do this, that, or the other, or we will create jobs if we do this, that, or the other. So let's hear about this, that, or the other, and about energy and jobs right now from Stephen Colbert and his people.
This next one, a good one. Okay. Chapter 5, Energy. Energy is no game. It's a vital part of our economy. But what if it was a game? We'd be A-Rod strapped to LeBron's back being thrown downfield by Tom Brady. Because we have only 5% of the world's population, yet we use 20% of the energy. We're beating expectations by 400%, according to my diesel-powered calculator. The point is, America is winning energy. If you watch TV, and I pray you do, you know that our nation's biggest potential employer is America's oil and gas producers. The reason you know that is a series of powerful energy ads which prove that the way to get this nation back on track is through coal mining, oil drilling, drill mining, coal oiling, oil milling, drill coaling, and droil milling. So here with more on the exciting opportunities provided by America's oil and gas producers is the attractively authoritative yet approachable woman from those ads. The following is a paid advertisement.
Thanks, Stephen. Big fan of you and your work on The Stephen Colbert Show. In today's energy economy, Americans are looking for real solutions, and America's oil and gas producers can bring those solutions today, and all of tomorrow's todays tonight. And you can trust me, because I'm speaking with a clear and soothing tone of voice. Speaking slowly, so you know that what I'm saying is true. We are today's energy companies, not your dad's energy company, the one which existed in a statistically corollary but not proven to be causal relationship with his emphysema. We are forward thinking, positive, and make generous use of uplifting background music because it connotes cleanliness. America has some of the greatest energy resources on Earth, which, according to our gasologist's objections, if used in combination with technology yet to be invented or imagined, could sustain us for the next 6,000 years. Do you think any other country has those advantages? Think again. Then, think again about today's energy companies today. Also, jobs. Did you know that in terms Saudi Arabia of coal, or that we're the equivalent of two Saudi Arabias of natural gas. Without our reliance on fossil fuels, we would suddenly find ourselves the Saudi Arabia of not comparing ourselves to Saudi Arabia. Then where would we be? That's why we need an all-of-the-above approach to energy. That means exploiting yesterday's oil and gas reserves today, while exploring for tomorrow's energy of the future now. And that approach depends on policies like approving the Keystone XL pipeline to bring either 800,000 or a different big number of barrels of safe, polite Canadian oil to American refineries. This pipeline would significantly jobs America's energy, power, security, safety. It's common sense. So join us, and together we can work together to secure America's energy future and create jobs together. That's why, right here in America, today's energy companies have already begun to jobs tomorrow's energy by leveraging innovation and pioneers weave technology. Clean future and jobs can work all of the above energy policy future now, as well as future jobs and energy jobs. Energy future policy jobs. And together, the jobs we need to jobs our country forward towards a sunnier and jobbier energy job future. Won't you join us? Jobs.
Thanks, actress playing someone I can trust. Listeners, she's right. Oil powers this country, and it has since the early 1900s. Before that, it was horses and slaves, but let's just focus on the horses. In 2010 alone, America consumed nearly 7 billion barrels of oil. To put that in perspective, if you put that many barrels of oil end to end and then painted them all green, then painted eyes and fangs on the front, it would look like a really long snake. Scary stuff. But there are so many more places we could be drilling for America's future. We could easily drive down the price of gas by a dollar or more, and all we would have to do is let petroleum companies ravage our national parks. Sadly, a sinister conspiracy is hoarding these resources for themselves. The powerful and shadowy cabal known as campers.
Follow me on Twitter, please. Tweet me. Follow me on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter by following me at TJ Savino Twitter. TJ Savino Twitter, please comment on the show, say hi, anything. TJ Savino Twitter. And one of the things that are that have bothered me, and one of the things that for which I have a gripe, a fine wine from Select Gripes, is GMO foods. I mentioned it before. There's so much evidence against genetically modified organisms, food-like substances. I refuse to call it food because it isn't. And here's a funny take on a thing called Just Say No to GMO.
Store. They say it's safe, everybody eat more. On second thought, I don't really know. It is made with those GMOs. So I'm looking for the non-GMO label. Before I bring it home, I put it on the table. I want to know if it's verified so I don't harm myself. It's genetically modified. They don't want you to know. Poison, grow. Show on the GMO. Gonna hurt us, no. Cold and go. Say GMO, no. Hey, look. I don't want to eat poison. I don't want gene mutations. Am I getting reservations? It's a food abomination. What they're doing to this vast donation? Take artificial gene combinations, injected in seed variations, so they can grow their frankenfood imitations. While the side effects cause medical patients, you just drop it alive while they're spraying all the food with name brand herbicides. And all the while they're spreading their lies. Monsanto destroy a farmer's lives. And the FDA just keeps it all going, saying it's safe, even though they all know it's just poison. Stealing the way you like, and that's what you eat. Genetically modified. They don't want you to know. Poison, poison, they grow. Profits, they show. GMOs, no. Diseases, they sow. Gonna hurt us, we know. Told them to grow. Say GMO, no.
FDA scientists said GMOs might create allergies, toxins, new diseases, and nutritional problems.
GMO safety, huh? That's a corporate myth. If you don't believe me, listen to Jeffrey Smith. He's the man with the plan, gonna do what he can to help us all get those GMOs banned. Though we need you to lend a hand, take a stand against this food stand. It's a mission for the health condition worldwide, cause we don't wanna live genetically modified. Unless you know what's in it, don't believe the propaganda, the press will spin it. Affects everybody, we all up in it. Stand up to Monsanto, tell him, oh no, you didn't. Reject breaking foods in the store, demand on his label so we can be informed. We have a natural right to know what we buy it. Just say no to GMOs before our farms start dying. Just say no to GMOs. These corporate crooks are lying. Just say no to GMOs. This time we're not complying. Just say no to GMOs. You're just not buying. Just say no to GMOs. Just say no to GMOs.
George, he's got it. It is the end.